Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigax, and of course you all just heard my new intro music. I'm so happy with it. Again, that came from a carrier out of Boise, Idaho, and I can't thank you enough for that. So today, by popular demand, I am here with Carlton Pinto, candidate for president in Branch 36, and I am here with Brian Gutierrez, candidate for executive vice president in Branch 36 in New York. Let's start with Carlton. Say hello.
Hello, everyone. Again, I'm Carlton Pinto out of New York City, and I am running for president candidate nominee for Branch 36. It's an honor to be running. And first of all, I just want to thank you, Alan, first. I don't want to go further, but just thank you for just an opportunity just to be on your platform. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. I'm stoked to have you guys because we have this shared mission, essentially, of reforming, getting our branches in line with the bylaws and things like. And we're going to talk about that a lot today. All right, let's throw it over to Brian.
Thank you, Alan, for having us. My name is Brian Gutierrez, running for executive vice president for Branch 36. Again, this isn't just about us. This is about every branch that's out there that's just, and for carriers that are just tired of their branch not doing anything for them. This is to light that fire. The CLC is trying to go after national. Now it's up to people like us to go after the local. And that's just what we got to do.
That's it.
What we got to do.
Yeah, we need change from the top to the bottom. And this comes up when you talk to national officers, whether it's Mike Cariff or James Henry, they all see the same thing. You know, a brief anecdote before I get into what you guys are doing. When I went to a planning meeting early on for the concerned letter carriers, there were these people who are prominent, you know, they're now branch leadership, wherever they're from. And they all went around the room and told stories about exactly what you guys are dealing with, like trying to unseat the good old boys, trying to make positive change in their branch and getting retaliated against, getting removed from their positions, things like that. So that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today. So first, Carlton, I want to get your thoughts on just being a force for change in your branch, like the steps that you have to take if you want to affect that change.
First of all, it has to be a mindset. You have to have the right mindset. But Brian and I, this is not our first rodeo. So I need the what I mean by the mindset, this has to be, it's a difference between a conviction and a preference. I'm gonna say it again. It's a difference between a conviction and a preference. This is not a preference for us, because we would have gave up the last time when we ran for office. We are blacklisted. We no longer allowed to facilitate. But as I shared with Brian, we're not allowed to facilitate anymore on that level. But when we become branch president and vice president, we could do it on a higher level.
When you say facilitate, you mean like teaching in the Carrier Academy, for example?
Teaching at the Carrier Academy. Correct, sir.
Yeah. And it's so petty, because you think as the president, you should be thinking like, what's best for the members in my branch? And in the Carrier Academy, what's best for the new people who are coming in?
Exactly. They're supposed to be our parents. And as a parent, you want to grow your kids so they can be better than you and take on the legacy. And that's not what's happening here.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I'm going to take this opportunity, Alan, to go on record.
Okay.
It's very important. This is going to be a big difference between current leadership and how we want to run things. Any part-time officer, or even the full-time officers, when they lose and we take over, they will not be blacklisted.
Yes.
They will not suffer any sort of reprisal from us the way we suffered from them. If they are willing to work with us and try to execute our vision for what this branch could be and should be, they are more than welcome to join in that endeavor with us.
If they want
to continue being hearing officers, if you have a good track record and you're an excellent hearing officer, whether you were with our team or not, that is completely irrelevant. If you're doing well by the members at your job, you are more than welcome to continue that if you're willing to work with us. Correct. We have no issues with that. So let me go on record and say that right now, for anybody that's going to listen to this podcast, you do not want to become the people you're trying to overthrow. Then you're just, you're not making any sense. You're just continuing the same old story. Do not treat people the way they treated you and then say that you're different. Makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
Go ahead, Carlton.
No, I'm just echoing Brian. Yeah. It makes no sense. He's absolutely correct. Because we know what it feels like. We love what we do. We love our job. We love, for example, we love going to the academy because we're the first impression. Setting the mindset, setting up the 4 days for them, because we have the millennials in there, understanding the system, understanding the language of the post office. We love that. We get good remarks every week when we were there. Brian's an excellent teacher. He's a teacher with patience. So to take him out because he ran against you, isn't that our right? Isn't that our freedom?
Yeah,
so, it's ridiculous. So you're hurting the body. You're hurting the body of the union, of the future millennium, by taking us out as teachers.
Yep.
That's not right.
No,
and we're not going to continue that.
Right. It is counterproductive. It goes against what benefits the branch, and that's what these officers are supposed to be there for.
Correct, sir.
Yeah, Michael and I had the exact same plank in our platform, that we had an anti-retaliation policy, that if you're willing to help the branch, we want you to help the branch. And that it's just that simple. Okay, so now you've laid out that it's a passion. It has to be within you.
Yeah.
Yep. So next, how do you group up? How do you find people who share that vision with you?
You want to go first, Brian, or you want me?
I mean, sure. You know, you really just have to. I mean, depending on how many years you have on the job, you would hope that there would be some people in your station, some people that you've known through the years through other means, as far as communication. Anybody that you see that you feel there's something about this person that maybe I should approach them and say, hey, you know, how do you feel about the current situation in your branch? And is there something you'd like to do about it? And things like that. I mean, there's really no clean way to do it other than to really just talk to people, see how they're feeling, and then try to get that gauge from that person of, is this a person that I can see will run with me, but not only run with me, will stay the course.
Right.
Throughout whatever occurs, I can see that this person, or I can feel that this person will continue the path with me no matter where it goes.
Carlton, how did you hook up with Brian? Were you guys at the same station?
No. I met Brian once at one of a union convention, but we never really talked. And it's not until we got to the academy, we built a beautiful friendship.
Right. You taught together in the academy. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, then we built that beautiful.
Interestingly.
But I just want to continue something that he was saying. I'm sorry. But just finding that diamond in the rush it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy to find that leader.
Yeah,
because,
that's true.
Because again, this current leadership been in there since 92 as a full-time officer, the president that we have now. So it's not easy to find somebody because, again, some people say, I don't want to deal with the politics, or I don't want to go through what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
So finding that diamond in that pack is not easy sometimes. It has to be somebody. That's why I say it has to be a conviction and say, you know what? I'm willing to go through what you went through to get to that place. Because, again, once we get there, it's not about just us. It's about the membership. Because we put on the uniform. We know what it goes through when leadership don't show up at the station. We don't want them to feel like that anymore. I wrote down something, Allie,
and
I said a strong branch extends from and reaches out to provide shade, support, and connection. That is the same way a branch should be, to stretch out to every member, to encourage that no one would stand alone, and shield each member from the storm. We just don't carry mail. We carry each other forward. That's what a true branch is supposed to be.
Yeah, that's leadership.
Amen,
that's
brother.
Leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what we receive.
No, you know, you mentioned that you and you and Brian got to know each other at the Carrier Academy. Interestingly, I used to teach at the Carrier Academy with my current branch president. And yeah, man, things have really turned.
yeah, that's quite the turnaround.
Man. Yes, it is. Yeah, so you guys talk about finding your right people. Obviously, you guys have found each other. I had a similar path to Michael where people told me, like, hey, you should really go talk to that guy. And people were telling him, you know, another potential avenue to find let me finish this real quick. Another potential avenue to find like-minded people is who else is speaking up at the branch meeting, or who else is hanging out afterward and you know, wants to talk about what went on, because that's where you're going to find those resources who are also willing to go to the branch meeting.
I agree. Definitely look out for those people that have the courage to speak out at union meetings, have the courage to speak out at station meetings when the branch comes over and visits, and you know, and whoever's challenging the branch in any form, that's definitely somebody you want to go up to and speak to and see gauge their interest and passion as far as what's going on with the branch. I am going to be honest. When you're trying to make a slate, again, it's not easy finding in our branch. It's not easy to find 19 people who are willing to take on the establishment. So I don't know how it might be in other branches, but if you have two or three people that you know and are like-minded, then those two or three people might know another two or three people that you've never met.
Right.
But they vouch for. And so you just kind of build your team. And to be honest, there's a lot of people that, you know, you kind of may not even meet them for the first time until after like the first meeting of the team. And that's just something that you just got to work through when you're trying to overthrow, you know, the branch leadership. Your team might not be as cohesive as you want it, but you just understand that your entire team has the same goal, same vision. You know what I mean? And you just kind of, you roll with that.
Right. And that would be the job of someone like Carlton in leadership, is to make sure that everybody's together, everybody's on the same page, you're all pulling that rope in the same direction.
Correct.
Okay, so let's move on.
I don't want people to get discouraged if you're not running against the branch with all close friends.
Like, right.
Unfortunately, that's probably not going to happen, right? Depending on what the branch is, but you know, it's probably not going to happen. You're probably going to be running with people that you may not know too well. And trust me, during a campaign, you're going to know them very well. it'll come. But when you first start, you may be running with people that you're not very familiar with. You just know that they feel the same as you, that they have the same passion as you. And then you just have to go with that, you know, and roll along with that.
Right. And there may be reasons why that might be unhealthy. Like, for example, in our current branch officers, one of our trustees is the girlfriend of the president, and another trustee is the wife of the treasurer. So the two people have to sign off on the bills, have their significant others checking the books.
No conflict there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. So you talked about don't get discouraged. So I want to, speaking of being discouraged, tell me about the last election.
Wow. You want to start with that one, though?
Wow. There's so many things. Well, it's a learning experience, number one. One of the things that we learned from the last election is the retirees. We know the retirees are the ones that do most of the voting. So tell me why that the branch sent out the retirees 2 ballots.
wait. Each retiree received 2 ballots?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's quite a mistake.
So that means the retiree could be giving them 2 votes, or giving us 2 votes, or giving them 1 vote and giving us 1 vote.
So
during the last election,
in theory, when those votes come in, like every time you open an envelope, you check their name off the roster so that they can't vote twice. At least that's what's supposed to happen.
So supposed to happen. Right. But we never got that opportunity when our observer went to observe the ballots being opening and checked off, you know, from the list. The ballot company that our branch uses, they had already done that prior to the observers coming.
Wow.
So all that was left was opening up the secret envelopes.
Right, which could come from anybody by their very nature.
So, yeah, again, we're not here to throw out conspiracy theories. It was just unfortunate that there was a lot of discrepancies that we couldn't really control. And then it just leaves these open-ended questions that you never really get an answer to, because even with the appeal, we never really got a straight answer on what happened.
Dude, and isn't it funny how these errors always seem to favor the incumbents?
Oh, yeah.
What a coincidence. Okay, so you learned from the first time that you have to reach out to the retirees. We learned a similar lesson in our first run, which was unsuccessful.
Right.
So what are you doing this time to get to the retirees?
We're making sure that we send out our literature. We're making sure that we send it out, mailing to every retiree, number one. And we're also doing it also to the full-time carriers we are sending out this year. So I know you don't get into that, but you have to have campaign money, and we'll get into that when you're ready.
We'll get into it right now, because that's part of what it takes. Like, yeah. What you learned from that first time. Go for it.
Go ahead, Brian.
Carlton hit the nail on the nose. Retirees is unfortunately, it's always going to be a great challenge trying to reach out to these people, because, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of these people, they don't know who we are. Right. And we don't get their contact information. We don't get their address. So, I mean, you just have to sort of a mailing is really the primary way to get even noticed a little bit by these retirees. Then you just got to hope they have some sort of social media and they sort of run into your page at some point. You know, we call all the retirees that we know.
Yes.
And hope that they spread the word. But It's definitely the biggest challenge when you want to take over a branch is overcoming that disadvantage that the branch naturally has when it comes to the retiree vote. If you've been retired for 10 years and we send you a mailing of our names, and then our current leadership sends them a mailing with their names, and they have no idea who we are, and they left that job 10 years ago with no bad feelings about anything. You know, it's kind of, even if they were just neutral, it's just going to be, it's unlikely they'll vote for us. Even if they don't vote for them, it'll just be a no vote, right? Like, they just won't even bother, you know, but it's a real challenge. And so what you really have to focus on outside of trying to reach as many retirees as possible is you have to do the best you can to get out the active votes as much as possible from the active members. You need to somehow find a way to increase the percentage of active members voting to sort of nullify that natural advantage that the branch will most likely have when it comes to retirees.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the NALC has a very strong incumbent bias. The incumbents win well over 90% of the time. And the system is set up to favor the incumbents, because the system is set up by the incumbents. And so they have, you know, in addition to having more access to the retirees, like, they could have a retiree luncheon and the retirees come down to the union hall. Do they do that?
Our branch does it all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And then the president is up there.
They hold retiree seminars, you know, before.
Yes.
Right.
As soon as people are close to retirement, they start holding these seminars. So, you know, it's just difficult. You know, we don't have those kinds of capabilities to get people together, get retirees together. We just don't have the abilities to do that. It's a very, very hard challenge to overcome.
Yeah. And then they also have the ability to, the incumbents can go into all the different stations and go around and glad hand. And you guys can't do that either.
Nope.
No, we have to be outside the station. We have to be outside the station or doing something off the clock after work.
And what makes it even more frustrating is that the Department of Labor, like, literally says they can do this. Like, it's just, it's pretty wild that that's even, you know, it's even like, it's just kind of like glossed over.
Yeah.
In one of the languages they have in the Department of Labor laws.
All right. So the odds is against us right off the back. So, you know, we have to have boots on the ground. To go out there, we have to take days off or take vacation to show up at these stations, or even show up on Sunday just to promote, to market who we are. Time for change.
The commitment is there's no way around it. You have to be completely committed. This is not something you're going to win if you do it half ass. There's just no way you're going to do it. If you're going to run and you decide you want to run, then you have to be 100% committed, understanding the sacrifices that you're going to have to make just to have a shot at taking over. Because there's so many things against you right off the top that, you know, if you try to half-ass it on top of all these structural disadvantages you're already facing, I mean, you might as well just not even bother.
No question. So, Carlton.
That's why I told Brian, you know, earlier, I said, we have to go through the fryer to get to the hot seat. And that's why I say it has to be a conviction.
Right. Yep, absolutely. So
Let
me ask you guys this. There's another disadvantage that you have, which is money. I saw in your bylaws how much your president earns, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. It's a nice little salary he's got going.
Absolutely.
So what do you guys do to raise money? Because like sending out a mailer, that ain't cheap.
No, it's not. It's definitely not. And I'm going to tell anybody that's running, if you think you're going to run, because ours is every 3 years, and if you know you're going to run, you have to do some type of fundraiser or save some money up too for the mailer. Because again, I'm gonna let Brian share on it because we went through the experience. We came up with the money for the mailer. But then Brian, take over with the little hurdle we had to go over.
So we designed the mailer. We had it sent over to the ballot company so that they can mail it out, because that's how it works with us. I'm not really sure if that's a similar situation with other branches, but the way it works with us is you design your mailer, you get them printed, and then you give it to the ballot company, and they're the ones that affix the addresses to everybody, and they mail it out through the post office themselves. And so we sent it to the ballot company, and they told us that it was not – well, we were trying to mail a postcard. Mm-hmm. And they said that it was not USPS regulation postcard size.
Oh my God.
And so the postage price that we were quoted with the original price that was quoted was off by $2,000.
Oh my God. Like you had to pay a non-machinable surcharge or something like
that. But Brian, tell them the reason why. Because we did have it at the size, but the way the postage, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. So we wanted to have a 5x7 postcard.
Okay.
And so we designed it that way. But the spot where you have to have the addresses affixed to, again, this just comes through trial and error.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you who are listening and they want to send a mailer to a postcard.
Yes, listen up closely.
All right. You have to have the address area where they're going to put the addresses and the indicia, it has to be on the horizontal side.
Oh, not on the vertical side. Right, because that's the way it runs through the machine. Yeah, horizontal.
Yes. Oh, so unfortunately, man. Our design, we had it on the vertical side. So the postcard became a 7x5, not a 5x7.
Oh, dude.
So that was something that we had to learn this time around.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were fortunate enough to know people who were able to help us out, and we just took care of it money wise. But I'm with Carlton all the way here. If you're thinking about running, let's say in the next 3 years, you should just start trying to save up as much as you can now so that you don't run into these problems.
Right.
When the election comes, don't try to figure out how to get the money after you've already done the nominations. That's just not the smart way to go.
So no, that's not.
Yeah. Here's an interesting thing. In my branch, we got a mailer from the incumbent team, and it came to our house pre-sorted standard. So that means that our president was able to mail stuff out for, you know, 26 cents a letter instead of 73 cents a letter. And that seems great. I wonder how he was able to pull that off. He used the same print company. They put him in the exact same envelopes. And a lot of our ballots came also pre-sorted standard, which is obviously a violation.
That's
a big violation. Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that our election is going to be rerun.
Gotcha. The mailer does give you the option of putting it as a pre-sorted standard. We don't have to pay first class.
Okay, good.
But we want to do that because, again, this is going through experience, guys. Whoever's listening to this podcast, if you're going to do it for the first time, second time, whatever. The last time we sent out our mailer, we never received any notification of any of them being returned undelivered.
Right? Okay.
So we have no idea, actually, how many retirees got our mailer.
Right. Right?
We don't even have the percentage of that. So, and again, we didn't know any better, so we didn't ask until after the appeals process. Then I found out, wait, we're supposed to, you know, they're supposed to notify us of this stuff. And same thing goes with the ballots. To this day, we don't know exactly how many undelivered ballots there were.
When all those materials are supposed to be kept, how is that a mystery?
This is what I'm trying to say. The Department of Labor, this is why I'm a little discouraged with, I had this, the Department of Labor made their investigation. This was part of my appeal, and it was just never touched. And they didn't touch it because they said it was not part of my original appeal.
Wow. Right?
Because for those of you who want to appeal an election, please understand you only have 5 days after election day to appeal the election.
Right.
Say it again. They need to hear that.
You only get 5 days. That's it. It's just 5 days to appeal an election result. And so it took our team 2 or 3 days just to decide whether to appeal it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that just left 2 days to really figure out what we were appealing. And so I put in a bunch of appeals, different things that we saw that we did wrong, that we felt was done wrong.
Right.
As the appeal process went through, I was adding things in the process.
I hear you. Right.
And I was making the arguments that there's a lot of court cases that allow this to happen. That, you know, there's a lot of discretion that's allowed to allow appeals, extra appeals to be allowed to be focused on, even if it's not in your original appeal.
Okay.
But the Department of Labor did not they used their discretion and did not even bother looking at anything else that I had on there except for the first, I think it was 12 issues that I listed. They didn't even bother looking at it because I must have added like almost 20 new ones as the process went on. So anybody who's willing to wants to appeal or is thinking about appealing a result, if you get to that level, please have everything, put your P's and Q's together, cross your T's, dot your I's, because they're probably only going to look at what your original appeal has inside it, not anything else you want to add after that.
That's correct. That's good teaching there, Brian.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so the Department of Labor wants you to exhaust all of your internal appeal process first, which is what we're still going through at my branch. And then after that's done, then you can go to the Department of Labor. Oh, go ahead, Brian. You're shaking your head.
Don't get me started, Alan.
Right. And Lord knows my listeners have already heard enough about this.
listen to this, all right?
Okay.
If you look at the NALC election appeals rules in the book.
I've looked at them a few times.
Right?
Yep.
All right. So the Department of Labor, you must appeal to the Department of Labor within 3 months of the election. Okay. It has to be within 90 days of the election, and you have to go through the process. So you have to appeal it. And then if you don't get a final decision within those 3 months, you can appeal it to the Department of Labor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The way the NALC has their election, appeals rules laid out.
Right. Drags out.
Have to file an appeal with the Department of Labor before you even reach the deadline to appeal it to the National Association, the Committee on Appeals, right? So if you wait for the Committee on Appeals to make their decision, you're going to go past the deadline for what you're allowed to file a case for the Department of Labor. Have to file a case with the Department of Labor before it even gets to the Committee on Appeals. When you file a case with the Department of Labor, the Committee on Appeals sends you a letter saying, well, you filed the case with the Department of Labor, so we're going to defer a response until the Department of Labor conducts their investigation.
And that's what happened to us.
Right. And so if the Department of Labor then finds nothing that changed that could change the result, the Committee on Appeals simply says, well,
the Department of Labor ruled against you, so we're just going to go with what the Department of Labor investigation says.
Correct.
So it's done on purpose, where you have to go through the Department of Labor first before it even gets to the Committee on Appeals. That's how long they stretch it out.
Right.
So and so they do that on purpose, because if you file with the Department of Labor, the Committee on Appeals, they get a get out of jail free card.
Right. They don't want to get involved with that.
They'll
right.
just go with whatever the Department of Labor finds. So if the Department of Labor finds in your favor, the Committee on Appeals will just agree. And if they don't find it in your favor, they're just going to agree with that as well.
Right.
So they gotta get out of jail free card.
Dude.
Now, if you decide to skip the Department of Labor, you can still go with the NALC Committee on Appeals, but now you've lost that other route that was available to you, and they put you in that catch 22 situation.
Dude. Right. Yeah, so I've probably already lost my ability to file an appeal with the Department of Labor at this point, because now we're at the National Committee on Appeals.
Oh, so that, you only have 90 days from...
But I could have sworn I saw in there, like, it was you have a certain amount of time after the final decision is rendered within your own internal appeals process.
No, you have a certain amount of time that... So you can file a case with the Department of Labor within a certain amount of times if you have not received a final decision within a certain amount of time.
Interesting.
Then you can file the case. Yeah.
You know, and
it's a lot.
It is. And all of this because the branches won't follow the fucking bylaws and the election rule book. It's not terribly complicated. You could read it in under an hour. And they got a cheat sheet at the back that charts everything out. Dude. It's not too much to ask.
That's why I echo it again. Your conviction has to be stronger than your preference, your why, your purpose. We're doing it again because we know our purpose, our why is big. We're doing this because we're tired of seeing our membership suffering.
Yeah.
So we're willing to go through this and learn. Trial and error.
I hear you. So, you know, you mentioned in some of our communication back and forth that you guys had an attorney. Did you hire that with your joint funds as well? Or what's the story with the attorney?
Yeah.
So even in the first election, after, you know, we went through the election and we were considering the appeals, that's when I started really getting into the Department of Labor laws. And I didn't even know the first time that the Department of Labor laws had election rules. I always thought it was just the rules in the NALC book.
Right.
That needed to be followed. I wasn't even aware there were other rules. So, you know, again, this is just it was a learning experience the first time. And when I saw all these rules, and then that's when I started adding all these different things to the appeals process as it went through. I saw all these other violations from the Department of Labor laws. And so I decided to get the lawyer to sort of handle the initial, how do I say, notification to the branch that we were appealing the appeal, the, you know, making the appeals, and so to the Department of Labor.
Right.
So I had him handle the appeal to the Department of Labor.
Okay, I got you.
For the first time around, and so you know, and he said, "Wow, you know, this is crazy what you guys went through." And he said, "You know, the next time you guys try to run, please just give me a call, and I will help you guys the next time." And so
that's
how I met him. And he's a very nice guy. He does it pretty much pro bono, which is just lucky for us.
That helps
Very small fee. Yeah, exactly. Very small fee. I did look for other ones. Yep. The fees are pretty crazy.
Luckily in New York, the rents are real low and everything's real affordable.
Yeah. I would advise, again, if you're going to be running, the branch is always going to try. Well, I'm sorry. Our experience is incumbents will always try to do whatever they can that they think they can get away with to try and, you know, even pad their natural advantage over you already. And so that I would suggest you and advise you get a lawyer and have that lawyer involved and CC'd in every email, every communication. That way, you know, you have somebody who has a lot of experience with election laws is already on board.
What kind of attorney did you get?
He's a labor lawyer.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And again, thankfully he has a lot of it. He's been doing this 46 years.
Wow.
Yes.
You know, so he does a lot of this stuff, and I've CC'd him on everything. We already had a ballot issue this time around.
Oh yeah, tell my listeners about that briefly.
So the ballots were supposed to go out last Tuesday. And you know, sometimes, you know, you're just overwhelmed with things, and it was the Sunday prior, that Sunday. I started thinking to myself, something's off, right, this time around. I'm like, there was something we didn't do this time. And I realized what it was is we never got a copy of the ballot itself, right?
You're supposed to get it got sent out.
Right. So this is Sunday now, 2 days before the ballot is supposed to go out. And I realized to myself, wait a second. I never even got to check to see if the ballot is correct, right? So I email them Sunday evening, hey, I'd like to get a copy of the ballot, right? So Monday morning, the election committee chairman sends me a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? We see errors on the ballot.
Right.
They got two members on their side who are associated with stations that they're not associated with. Right.
Okay.
And so that's the one that's what we caught on the first look. Right. And so I emailed the chairman along with the ballot company, along with the lawyer. Like I said, always CC everybody
right.
in your communication. And then he sends me a couple hours later, he sends me an email saying, oh, I gave you an older version. Here's the updated version. So then in the updated version, I see they fixed one of the errors, one of the stations for their members, but they still left the second one wrong. And then they had one of our members running for two positions.
So on the ballot. You guys know from dealing with the Department of Labor that their standard is essentially, did this have a material impact on the outcome of the election? And certainly having a candidate run for more than one position, at least for that candidate, is definitely going to have a material impact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what I put. And again, you got to be very clear, you got to be really, again, cross your T's, dot your I's in the emails. Mm-hmm. That's what I put. I said, listen, this is ridiculous. This is going to cause a lot of confusion. This is going to cause the elections to really be just screwed up. The voters are not going to know what's going on. I put it all in there. You know what I'm saying? This is going to cause issues with the ballots and the votes. And so this is going to be appealed, you know, unless you fix this. I'm letting you know now, this is going to be appealed no matter what happens. Right.
Right.
So then he sends another email saying that they fixed it. They send the final copy. And that unfortunately the mailing date had to be delayed, obviously, because and so the election date got pushed back.
Right. And we talked about
if I didn't send the email Sunday evening,
it would have gone out wrong.
Those would have literally been the ballots that got sent out.
Yeah. So, dude, go ahead, Carlson.
You're gonna have sleepless nights. As I told the team, because the election day now is March 31st. So every day you got a sacrifice. It's a lot of sacrifice staying on there. You know, Brian's the point of communication because we don't want no confusion. And again, he picks the president picks the place where the election, the ballots go to. He picks the committee. So there's a lot of things that's against us. And this is one of the reasons why we needed a lawyer, because he understands the language, what we don't understand. We can't see everything.
Right.
And we know this the second time around, we saw a lot of things that was going. So we needed a lawyer from the beginning.
Yeah. One of the things that Michael and I are considering proposing to change in our bylaws is to have the election committee vote, not appointed by the president, but rather by vote of the members who are present at the meeting, something like that.
Great idea. Yep.
Great,
I wish you the
excellent
best
idea. Excellent.
Yep. So let's now skip to the end of the last election. How did it go? I already know it was close. Tell the listeners.
You want me to tackle that one?
Yeah, you can start first.
Sure. All right. So let's just go with the president. His name was John Mooney. Excellent man. He definitely served the Carriers with the distinction for 40 years. We were honored to be under his ticket, and he lost by 24 votes.
Wow.
Position, he lost by 24 votes. There was about 1,400 votes cast.
Oh my God.
Total.
Yeah.
But the membership at the time was about 5,200 members.
Wow.
So there was only 1,400 people that voted, and he lost by 24 votes. And this is what I mean by when you guys are running, whoever's deciding to run, you really got to be on your P's and Q's, because the undelivered ballots,
right,
from what I understand, even though we don't have an exact amount, ranged from 75, anywhere between 75 and 500.
Oh, right? My God.
Right. And so if we would have been able to keep on top of that.
Right. To resend ballots out. Yeah.
Right. Who knows where that could have gone. And so you just really have to be on top of everything. And that's what we're doing this time around.
Right. Everything. You know,
but he lost by 24. And nobody lost by every position except one lost by less than 50 votes.
Oh, my God. Wow. What an effort. That's incredible.
Yeah. It was really tough loss. And you know, it was unfortunate, but you know, we just trudged along, you know. We learn from it.
It's a learning experience.
Right.
And now we're trying again, you know. Obviously there is some support for us there.
Yeah.
And so why would we let that just die? You know, it doesn't make any sense.
So that's what I want to get to next. You guys now, you've lost the election. It was very close. You don't just go away. It's time to regroup. It's time to keep pushing for change. Because as Carlton keeps saying, it's not just a preference. It's a passion. And so where do you guys go next? You know, what do you do to still try to affect positive change in the branch? I mean, obviously you're running again, which is why you're here. But in the meantime, or if you lose again this election, you know, what do you do? Where does your fight go?
Well, at that point, you just try to get members to meetings. You try to overwhelm their majority, which, again, they make it very difficult because of the time and no virtual meetings. But you just kind of keep doing that effort, trying to control the meeting so that you can put in motions that will try to make the branch better in spite of the branch leadership. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Trying to improve the branch, working around the leadership as much as you can. And then you submit bylaws too. You submit bylaw changes. You know, again, that process itself is also I was about to curse. Very
that's
frustrating.
All right. You can.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm trying. I'm trying my best not, you know, keep it clean. And so yeah. So that's another way of going around it. You know, and I don't know if I remember mentioned it last time, but you know, I was thrown out of the last branch bylaw meeting.
Yeah, you did mention that. Yeah, that's a badge of honor.
Right, yeah, you know,
here I am. I'm trying to have the benefits of the branch leaders not get paid by our union dues. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to expand the notification of elections in our branch, and I'm trying to expand membership. Expand membership opportunities to go to meetings by allowing virtual meetings.
Right. You're expanding democracy.
Somehow I'm the enemy and I'm trying to tear the union down. This is how I'm being portrayed.
Dude.
That I'm creating divisiveness and division in the union. I'm just a troublemaker.
Yeah, it's true, you know? Because you're moving away from just one voice. You know, just the president, that's as united as it gets. There's just one person and he does everything, and you're trying to democratize.
Let me apologize. I keep saying I was the one who proceeded with the motions, but let me back that up. I'm not giving credit. This is a team effort. I just happen to be the spokesperson, but this is everybody trying to accomplish these things. So that way, even if you lose the election, and you have to deal with crappy leadership, you just try your best to keep them as less crappy as possible.
Right.
Right.
That's kind of the goal. Even if you have an incremental, you know, change in the branch that benefits members in some freaking form, then you've accomplished at least part of your goal of improving the branch. Because at the end of the day, we're not doing this to get power.
Right.
We're doing this to improve the lives of our members.
Yeah, that's quite the opposite. So, with democratization, you're trying to disempower the office and put that power back where it belongs, in the hands of the members of your branch.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we want to do. We want to educate the members.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. So, and that because you guys are both teachers and you see the value of it. So let's talk about your bylaws. So in anticipation of this episode, I reread your bylaws and they are like out of the Stone Age. I mean, they're so old. I know in one of your presidential rulings, like it says that this predates even records that we have or something like that. So
yeah, they didn't have anything past a certain date right. with the email from Barner. There was nothing.
Yeah. So we'll get into that. Let me set it up a little bit. So one of the things that I saw that really caused me concern is your president's financial powers over the branch, because the branch is supposed to vote and approve all expenditures. And in the Constitution, that's the way it's laid out. But there could be a certain amount of money set aside for emergencies, or there's just like a threshold that below that they only have to get internal approval and not have to go to the branch. But your bylaws don't say that. Your bylaws say, quote, referring to the president, quote, he shall be the financial overseer empowered to approve or disapprove branch operations expensed, end quote. So that there's two ways to interpret that. And I know this is essentially what you wrote to get your ruling. One way is that he essentially has veto power, that he can say, no, the branch isn't going to spend money on that. But the other way to interpret it, which I'm sure this is the way he's interpreting it, is that he has carte blanche to do whatever he wants with branch finances. Tell me about, of course, this is the way it is being used right now, because, we get it. So tell me about your letter to the president or for asking for a ruling.
So, again, during the election, you start learning a lot of things. Let me backtrack to the bylaws, and then Carlton, I'll let you jump in a second. Before this election in 2022, the last one, I can't ever remember in my, at that point, it was 20 years in, I never saw a copy of the bylaws ever.
Right.
A lot of people I knew didn't even know the branch had bylaws, that that every branch even has a bylaws for themselves.
Yeah, we got the same problem in my branch. Yep.
Yeah, so that was really the first time anybody even started to understand that the branch has even rules that it's supposed to follow at all. And so just to give anybody who's running or is thinking about running, please get a hand on your branch's bylaws.
Yes.
To understand what's there. And try to work around it. So that's number one. So this branch has kept those bylaws hidden since at least the 90s. I've never seen them until 2022.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we had to force it out. We had to force it out of them.
Right, and I'm pretty sure.
And then ever since then, they still haven't reprinted them. They only reprinted it in 2022. After that, it went silent again. We've never seen them again.
Of course.
So when I read the NALC Constitution for the national, in the way they have it for the subordinate branches, I saw that this was an issue. I said, how can one thing say the branch members have say on how to spend money and understand where the money's going, and then our branch bylaws are completely different than what the national says. And so I sent a letter to, at the time, it was not the president. It was
the Committee on Laws, right?
Yeah. Committee on the Laws of Branch Bylaws,
which
was chaired, at the time was chaired by Paul Barner, who is currently the executive vice president of the NALC. And he ruled that, essentially that, the budget of the branch is supposed to be approved by the membership. And all this stuff, and Charlie was my branch president was CC'd, but nothing came from that. There was pretty much status quo after that.
Right,
Carlton.
We see things like when we go to meetings, we see like cameras. We see a whole bunch of cameras around in the union building.
Right, who paid for
that? Isn't that what told to the membership how much was spent, or do the membership want to approve it? Monitors and stuff like that. So that is a conflict for us, that on that level, we can't know how the money is being spent. And I remember one time we asked during the time we was running for election, let's see the credit cards. And he said, I'm not allowing y'all to go fishing.
That's crazy. It's
It could be stressful, but again, you can't give up your why. Your mission's going to change, your what and how is going to change, but your why is not going to change when you go through it. That's why I use the word conviction. It has to be conviction. Mm-hmm. Because we know how much people we're going, how much membership we're going to end up freeing. Because once we get in, we're going to get an auditor. We're going to audit everything.
Absolutely.
We're going to get to know things. It's going to be visible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is where going to the meetings is so critical, because you can take a decision like that where your president says, I'm not going to let you see the credit card statement, and you should be able to use Article 11 and appeal that to the branch and say, hey, this guy's trying to hide the credit card statement. I have a right to see it, and he's saying no, and then the branch overrules the president and forces him to make that available. But when your meetings are at 5 o'clock and regular members of your branch can't get there, then again, mm-hmm. the game is tilted in their favor. Yep.
And that's why it's so important that you got to try to get, when they're going to do a motion, you're going to have to try to get people down there that's in favor for you, because I remember one time we went down to a meeting, and I was disappointed about this. He created an argument by two brothers that I truly just love, and he watched them argue and fight just so he could stay in position. And they knew that we was bringing people to vote on our side. So what they did the next time, they had the book out to find out if they was in good standard before they let them into the building.
Right.
And I remember one person had to show her pay stub to show that she was paying union dues in order to come to a union meeting.
Oh, my God.
To stand in motion for us.
Right. Right, because their records aren't up to date, and they're not anything to game it in favor of themselves. Yep.
Pretty much.
Wow. And, dude, I can see why your president wants to hold on to that position, because in your bylaws, your president earns $113,588.80 annually, and it's paid weekly. So we're going to talk about the salary, but, guys, this is something that drives me nuts. The people in these positions, they're not better than the people they're serving. They're the servants of the people they're supposed to be serving.
That's right.
And this is such a small thing, but it's so indicative that your president, in the bylaws, gets paid every week. We get paid every 2 weeks.
Correct.
Why does he get paid more often than us? We should all be the same in that regard. You know, with a salary that big, you can afford to wait 2 weeks to get your pay. And there's little things like that, this little bit of self-dealing that goes on, is so indicative of the systemic problem.
Yeah, and again, it goes further than that. Mm. If you look at the LM2s, they get a $480 monthly stipend on top of that for I guess business usage or whatever.
Wow.
And that comes out to $4,800, I think. Basically, you get
it'd be around $5,000 a year.
On top of that, right? And then again, what people keep forgetting is this idea that they do not pay for their retirement health insurance, life insurance, union dues, and Social Security premiums do not come out of their check.
Right. Yeah. So that's on top of the salary. They keep the whole thing.
Exactly. Right. And so I'm just crunching my own numbers here. You know, I'm at the top pay for letter carriers, which I think is right around 76.
Something like that, yeah.
And I'm paying per year for all of those things about, give or take, $12,000 in premiums for all of those things. So you got to add to their salary that amount.
Yeah, so he's making about $50,000 more than you.
Essentially, just around that amount. Yes.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, why? You know what I'm saying? Why?
And he gets to have lunch in an air conditioned office, and get paid every week.
Plus and he's a trustee in Washington.
So he gets paid for that too. Yeah. Yeah. He's right on the board of trustees for the NALC. So on top of that, they're not paying the union dues. Like, I get it's kind of academic. It all comes out of the same pot, but not only does he not have to pay his union dues, but there's this weird clause in your bylaws that he gets like gold member status and never has to pay union dues ever again.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. If you hit 50 years.
Well, no, but there's also, I could be mistaken, but I could have sworn I saw in there that just by virtue of being elected president that you get that status.
Oh, I see. I don't know if it's minor.
It's not a big deal. Yeah, it just is more self-dealing. You know, this person is in the best position to help people, and he's helping himself.
and it's just been like that. It's been like that for a long time. It's just been like that for a long time and a long time and a long time. I'm actually amazed that I can tell you right now, when I started this career, there was no, if somebody would have told me I was going to be running for office for anything, I would have said you were crazy. What are you talking about? I had no desire for any of this.
Yeah.
But as I just kept seeing the branch just become more and more just, and for lack of a better word, it's just dying. It's just dying. There's so much potential here to do so much for so many people. And it's just being wasted and only benefiting a very few amount of people.
Right.
And it's just sad. I couldn't take it anymore. And the same thing goes for everybody on my team. They just could not take it anymore. Once they saw one person do it, which was me, Carlton, and John, they saw the three of us going after it, and they were like, yeah, we need to join them. You know, it just takes that one person or that little small group of people to spark all of that for a group of another group of people.
Right.
And who had the same feelings. They were just waiting for that spark.
Exactly. And this threat of retaliation that you guys face, that you've had to deal with, that goes for your supporters too. That if somebody stands up against the president at the meeting, they run that same risk.
Right. And we tell everybody that's going to join our team, we're very transparent with them. We say, listen, we love the fact that you want to join us, but if this doesn't succeed, please understand that your career as far as any sort of union movement is probably over.
That's so wrong.
You know, and it's unfortunate, but that's what it ends up being. You know, and just to touch on having conviction on this stuff. Okay, our last election again was very close. We had a lot of heavy hitters on our team last time. People who were previously involved with the branch and had a lot of experience. Their names were well known. And so, you know, that was a solid thing for us the first time around. A lot of those people left. They either got transferred or they retired or they just didn't have the stomach for it again, whatever the case may be. And so I want everybody again, whoever thinks about running, if you're not successful the first time, you may run again, but it may not be the same people. You might have different people, but you just got to keep it moving and keep it going. Do not let failure stop you from your goal. There's no reason for it. There's nothing to lose other than some time, maybe a little bit of money. But at the end of the day, there's not really much you can lose. We've already been blackballed.
Right. And what you're fighting against is already happening. And so when you lose, you don't lose that. That's already happened. Yep.
So we understand the worth versus the cost. And fail means a first attempt in learning. And we learned a lot. And that's why we're doing it again. Because there's members saying, you got to go back out there and do it again. You guys are good. The vision that you have and what you want to do for us, that's what we need. The CCAs have no support. When I say a branch, you're supposed to support. You're supposed to connect. Yep. It's not happening. And we spoke at some places, and some of the carriers saying, this is what we want. This is what we need. We're not getting anything. If you look at them, they're not saying one thing that they're going to do.
Right. Yeah, there's no platform for the incumbents.
That they got experience. That's the only thing they say. Experience.
Right. Okay. We are coming up on an hour, and I know people have places to go. So let me have Brian, any last message you want to pass on, and then we'll give Carlton the last word.
Well, I mean, I know we're hitting the hour, Mark Allen, but Carlton just touched on something that's very important.
Yeah, go for it.
Is that tactic of the current leadership talking about we have the experience? Okay, you know, they just sent out a post on their own social media. They basically did like a comparison chart between the people on our team and the people on their team, and they were like, oh, how many arbitration advocates do they have on their team? It's like zero, and we have five. How many people on their team have Step B DRT experience? One, and compared to like nine, and and so forth, just trying to make it seem like we're completely lost in the sauce as far as how we would possibly run a branch when we don't have the experience. And so you're going to, anybody again that's going to decide to run, you're going to hit that, you're going to hit that in your campaign. And so again, the way you hit back on that is, again, if you have all this experience,
what are you doing with it?
Why is it this branch exactly. is suffering? Why are you not doing anything for your members? The only thing they have experience in is understanding how to manipulate and control the Constitution and the procedures that that are allowed to be sort of, again, manipulated to make sure that they stay in power. That's where your experience is. That's what your experience is giving them. Their experience is giving them.
Right.
And it's not doing anything for the members at all. So, yes, congratulations that you are the gatekeepers on who not only who gets the experience, but then you get the experience and you don't do anything with it to help members beyond keeping yourselves in power.
Right.
So, that is true, because Brian and I have been asking for training. And you think you would let us get any training?
Right, of course not.
Of course you're going to have a number up because you control it. Mm-hmm. And I wrote something on this. I wrote it on paper because I want to make, you know, with dealing with experience. Experience is just a weapon that they want to use against you as the opposition. It's to maintain their status quo. It's a reason to maintain their status quo. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Experience, I'm going to say this. Experience is important, but what matters the most is the experience translated into positive outcome for our members. And that's what Brian and I and all of us have not been seeing. The reality is experience without innovation can lead to complacency. And that's what we are seeing.
Yep.
They're not engaging. They're not going out there. One of the things that Brian and I was talking about is we have to engage. So when we go in the office, we were talking about how do we follow a carrier who has the roughest route, the toughest route. So we can learn, so we can know the issues, or maybe we could change something in the bylaws where we could put back on the uniform and let them know that we just like you.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go back in a position as carriers, we no longer vice president and president for that week or for that day because we want to know the issue. But because the current administration that's in there that has a full-time office was in there before they were scanners. So when you speak language of breadcrumbs, geofence, staggering time, stationary time, those language he doesn't know. So how are you going to talk to the carriers at a meeting, at a general meeting, would you hear from a third party? Do you know that the scanners issues? Integrity issues, what they say with the scanners? So these are some of the things that Brian and I and the team been talking about. This is how we're going to stay up with things. This is how we're going to stay relevant with our members by doing things like that. If you're not coming to the station and engaging with them, yeah, you got experience, but what you doing with the experience?
That's right.
Experience alone doesn't make you move forward. Boldness, leadership, new ideas, and commitment to every members. And for us, we are ready to lead into the new future.
Carlton, that's beautiful.
Amen,
man.
Again. Amen again, brother.
Yeah, buddy. All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Guys, thank you for coming on. Thank you for getting your message out. Thank you for fighting that fight.
Thank you.
Guys,
thank
it's
you,
a pleasure.
And thank you. You are fighting the fight too. So kudos to you too.
Right on.
Iron sharpening iron, give a spark. And I think this thing that we had today was necessary because this is coaching right here. I believe it's coaching, creating opportunity and giving opportunity to get over a hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, again, as much.
Yes, we needed that because the three vehicles is branch. You know, the vehicles is running for the office. The next thing's the gas. We have that. Meaning you have to have the money. And then you need the roadmap. So this discussion is necessary because you need to know somebody who went through that so they can make less mistakes so they can get through this and they don't want to quit.
Yeah.
We see so many shops do it quit because they're not getting the support. So, Alan, kudos to you for having this platform because I believe this is educating and helping a lot of members what we went through. And if we had this, we wouldn't make this much mistakes. So we're still in the learning process.
Awesome. All right, guys, thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And listeners, Branch 36, if you are in Branch 36 in New York, make sure you get that ballot. Make sure you vote. Make sure you participate in your union. Guys, thank you very much for listening. I will catch you next time.